U.S. lawmakers reached a deal on Wednesday to raise the debt ceiling and fund the U.S. government into next year. Under the terms of the new deal, the U.S. Treasury may borrow money to service already existing debt through February 7th of the coming year and fund the government through January 15th. The director of the Rome Office for the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, Kishore Jayabalan, told Chris Altieri the broader issues underlying the crisis remain in place.
The deal that was signed into law yesterday, which came out of the U.S. Senate and then was approved by the U.S. House of Representatives, the lower house of Congress, and then signed by President Obama, reopened the government and raised the debt ceiling. The government had been shut down, partially shut down, I should say, for 16 days. And the debt ceiling crisis was an extension of this debate. It's really a policy disagreement between Republicans and Democrats. Part of the Republican Party wanted to use the Obamacare, which is the President Obama's health care reform package, which has been passed into law, as a tool to have a debate about the size of government and what the United States government should look like going forward down the road, and especially with the size of the debt and lack of economic growth.
Just to be clear, we're talking about many many state services that are not available during this period. Is that right?
Well, some of the state services that were closed down were things like National Park Services and some things having to do with Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, which affect millions of people in the United States. But when you have a system of divided government, unlike a parliamentary system, you have two parties. The Republicans controlled one half of one third of the federal government and used that power of the one half, the U.S. House of Representatives, to force a debate not only about the future of Obamacare, which was, you know, President Obama's signature domestic policy achievement in the last term, to not only have a debate about the viability and whether Obamacare should go forward, but also about the size of government and the level of debt. One faction within the Republican Party, otherwise known as the Tea Party, is quite, I would say, fervent in its belief that the size of government and the size of debt have gotten way beyond control, and that even under Republican administrations, we've seen maybe a slower rate of growth in the federal government, but nowhere near a reduction in the size of government. And the government shutdown was basically one tool that the Tea Party had to force a debate and to really try to, let's say, wake up Washington, D.C. or the establishment to what the Tea Party and what the American people would like to, at least what they say they would like to see done. On the other hand, you had a more, let's say, Republican establishment of big business and corporations who thought, look, there's no sense in trying to hold up what is going to be inevitable. And in many ways, that establishment view was the one that won out. The government shutdown didn't really change much in the debate. You had, you know, 16 days, let's say, of media reports about the Republicans being obstructionists, of people, let's say, being receiving government benefits at a delay, that they weren't receiving some things, national parks and libraries being closed and such things. But at the same time, what the Republican establishment has done is pretty much just delay a debate over the size of debt and Obamacare until January and February of next year. So this government shutdown and this debt ceiling fight has basically just, let's say, as the Americans often say, kicked the can down the road. It hasn't really resolved anything. The status quo still is in place. The levels of spending at the federal government will remain as they have been at this sequestered level, which is slightly less than what it would have been otherwise, but in no way is this a solution to America's debt problems or a way to get the U.S. economy back on track, which President Obama himself said last night in his comments about the deal that was reached between Republicans and Democrats in the Senate. The president, has said that he was willing to negotiate and to listen to all kinds of ideas, but so far we haven't seen any, let's say, willingness on either side to really come together and work out a deal for the American people.
Can I ask you a question just about the mechanics of this? Because it's surprising to people who are watching this from abroad. and watching this unfold really over the past more than 2 years now, really, since 2011, and where we had the first sort of summer-long theatrical crisis over this. The idea that the president, who's constitutionally charged with actually being the one to pay the country's debts and that he would need to go to Congress to get them to give him permission to borrow the money to service the national debt strikes many observers as pretty unwieldy, to say the least. Do you know anything about the history of this procedure and why so complicated?
It's complicated because we have a system of separated powers and checks and balances at the federal level. The president can't simply decide to extend a debt limit which Congress has imposed. The U.S. Congress has the purse strings, let's say, controls the purse strings and controls spending in the U.S. government. So the president can only do what Congress allows him to do when it comes to budgetary matters. And Congress itself has set this debt limit as a way of kind of controlling the amount of debt the federal government can run up. Now, of course, the Congress is the one that actually passes the budgets and increases the debt all the time.